Blog Talk Radio.
And now the end is near, so I face the final curtain. My friend, I'll say it clear, I'll state my case, of which I'm certain. I've lived a life that's full, I traveled each and every highway and more, much more than this, I did it my way. Regrets, I've had a few, but then again, too few to mention. I did what I had to do, saw it through without exemption. I planned each charted course, each careful step along the byway. More, much more than this, I did it my way. Yes, there were times, I'm sure you knew, when I bit off more than I could chew. But through it all,
All right, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron.
Yo, this is the Tornado, Tiny Penny Cow.
We're coming at you tonight with a special 58th anniversary edition of Fight News Unlimited Talk Radio, but it's the anniversary of the fight, 13th round knockout of Jersey Joe Walcott on this date, September 23rd of 1952.
And I love the Well, I love the intro song. Love the intro song. And if you go to the, for all of you who are listening, because I know you all went out and purchased one of the Rocky Marciano calendars that the foundation was selling last year, is the intro song, My Way by Frank Sinatra. Picture Marciano and Sinatra in December for this year's calendar. The only problem there was with the song My Way for Rocky Marciano is Rocky was 49-0. He did not have his share of losing.
Well, he lost money. He lost 50% of his paycheck to Al Weill.
Yes, you did. Very true. But it's great, we're doing a show like this, Rich, and, like, I think, you know, Rocky has, a special place for, you know, both you and I. I mean, obviously, I growing up, in an Italian family, and the stories that I've told 1,000 times and I'll tell again tonight. My grandfather, my great uncle, my father, you know, how, like, they idolized Rocky, you know, when they were growing up, and they passed that down to me, and, you know, having the old fight tapes and all the great stuff like that I still have. And then for you, obviously, you know, being up, in the town next to Brockton and getting a chance to, you know, meet members of Rocky family and work on the foundation and, help with the Ali Colombo tribute that you did earlier this year. I mean, so that's why I think it was really important for us to do this show tonight, to, you know, remember one of the absolute greatest fights, one of the greatest heavyweight fights in boxing history. Marciano was close to losing. This had to be probably within the top three of the fights where he was close to losing. He was down on the cards with 3 rounds to go, and it was a one-punch knockout.
Did you?
Well, I was saying, he was down on the cards, you know, 3 rounds to go, and, I mean, he starched him. I mean, it was a beautiful punch. And, I mean, if he would have thrown that, I mean, just a shade later, Walcott would have landed first, because what Jersey Joe was doing, you know, Jersey Joe was a slick guy. You know, and he was very good at baiting guys in. So what he ended up doing was he was backing up. He was setting the trap. You know, like a lot of times you'll see a really good, slick fighter do that. You know, he'll bait a guy in, he'll snare him. But Rocky snared him first.
You look at some of the pictures taken of that exact punch. It's probably some of the best boxing photography that exists in the world. I mean, that punch was just, it captured from so many different angles, and also on video. So when you watch the video, you can see Joe's right hand coming up. He's going to throw the right
hand. Oh, yeah. Joe's right hand did land. But by the time it landed, he was already unconscious.
Yeah, it just kind of died on the vine.
Yeah, right, exactly. Rocky was down in the first round. I mean, nobody thought Joe was going to fight that style. Joe was a very slick guy. He was a boxer. He was a guy who used his legs. Sometimes wasn't the most exciting fighter out there. But that time, like that fight, in the first round, I mean, he took it right to Rocky from the opening bell. And, I mean, he had Rocky on the canvas, like, I think it was like 42 seconds into the first round, a beautiful left hook. And then, you know, they were engaging. I mean, Joe engaged Rocky, which everybody said was like suicide, and was beating him at it.
We got a guy who I think explained something extra about that the last time we had him on, Nicky Sylvester, who was one of Rocky's boyhood friends and walked through his whole career with him, traveled around the country with him. And knows a lot about him. He ran with him, if you believe, all the way to Providence, Rhode Island from Brockton. I believe it. I mean, I know, but Mickey claims he was even faster than Rocky, so we'll have to get him going on that one. But anyway, we're going to have Nicky on. And you said you were going to have some poetry for us tonight? The Tornado Poet?
I'm glad you remember that, Rich. I'm surprised you did. And in fact, when we were playing My Way, I'm like, am I supposed to read a poem tonight? I said, oh, shit, yeah, I am. Well, I pulled that up on my computer here, and this was written in, I actually wrote this in 1999, back when I was getting ready to graduate college, and I was just kind of goofing around. I was in a literature class, and I lost my textbook about 1 week into class. But I knew the professor. I knew I was going to get an A. So I would just sit in class, and I would just write poetry the whole time. And I kind of enjoyed it, and I would just sit there, and sometimes things would just start forming in my head. And I actually wrote, I haven't written poetry in, I'll say, about 5 years now. But I was enjoying it for a while. And I actually, I'm going to send a few of them to you, Rich. I did a few on 9/11 tribute poems, which I think you'll enjoy, especially, you know, you being, having some friends, you know, you being from BMI and, you know, doing some stuff in the military and then having some good friends that served in the military in the Staff War.
I have some questions being worked on Thanksgiving weekend after September 11th because I went there, so.
Well, yeah, I'm going to send these to you, and I think you're going to like them. But let me get back to Roxy Marciano here. I wrote this in 1999, just a few short months after I graduated. And like I said, it just came so naturally that I felt like, you know, someone was talking to me from, like, you know, outside of my body, because, like, the words are just coming so quickly and so naturally.
Yeah.
And I'm proud to present this to you tonight. So if you're ready, here we go. It's called Rocky Marciano. Rocky Marciano, an Italian boxing sensation, his hardcore fighting style captured the heart of the entire nation. The greatest heavyweight champ had the nickname of The Rock. He could take a solid punch, for his chin was an iron block. His forte was his toughness, often fighting through the blood. And when his punches landed, they did so with a thud. He rose to title contention, beating Joe Louis on the way. To get a shot at Walcott, in 1952 came his day. It was September 23rd in the city of brotherly love. The Walcott gave a fight. The Rock finally rose above. Knocked to the seat of his pants and cut around the eyes. He waded through the punches as if they were from flies. As the 13th round began, The Rock's chances were running low. He needed a KO to win, which he got with a single blow. He threw a short right hand that Walcott never saw. The lights had been turned off the moment it struck his jaw. The Rock made 6 defenses before hanging up the gloves. He was a quiet, prideful champion that every fan still loves. He retired undefeated, going 49-0, but 43 of his wins were coming by KO. The only time he lost, and it proved to be the first, when his airplane struck a tree and into flames it burst. It's been 30 years since we laid the Rock to rest. Champs have come and gone, but he'll always be the best.
Standing ovation. That's good.
What do you think, Rich? Not bad, huh? What do you think? The only difference is now, instead of being, it's been 30 years, it's been 40 years, 41 years, just a few weeks ago since we lost Rocky.
Yeah, I actually moved out of Massachusetts the day he died, the end of August. So it's right on the calendar, too, right in front of me. And, you know, it's kind of telling, too, even though it's graphic and gruesome, that it took complete decapitation to kill the guy. His head came right.
Yeah, very true. I'll tell you, I was about maybe 14 or so years old, and I was really getting into boxing, and I was, at the time, I was, you know, getting some, like, these videos you could get through, like, Ringside. You know, actually, you could get them in, I hadn't even started getting stuff from Ringside yet. I was getting them in, like, you know how you said that goes in the mall, they have, like, Suncoast movie stores?
Yeah,
and I was doing it. I'd run right to the sports section all the time to see if they had any new boxing videos. Because the boxing videos, yeah, I used to love them all. And I'm actually holding it in my hands right now. The first one I ever got was called "The Heavyweights, the Big Punchers." And on the front is George Foreman and Joe Frazier, and on the back is Rocky bleeding from his left eye, fighting Ezra Charles. So some of the guys they had on here were like guys like Jack Dempsey and Joe Louis, Smoking Joe, George Foreman, you know, some, like, you know, Max Baer was on there, you know, some of the real great punchers, and they saved Rocky Marciano for last on this. And I remember watching it, and I was just so impressed, you know, They had him on there knocking out Walcott, both fights. They had him knocking out Edgar Charles, Don Cockle, Archie Moore. You know, I was just, and they were narrating as it was going on. I'm like, oh, man, this is so cool. And I guess about a year or so later, HBO had, they did a documentary on several, you know, fighters, and Rocky Marciano was being one of them. And they were, you know, telling some of the stories, and that was the first time, like, you know, they told of his, you know, they were talking about his death. It was the first time I had really learned, like, the full story behind it about, you know, crashing into the tree. And that's when I found out that, like, yeah, they had to have a closed casket, you know, coffin because Rocky had been decapitated. And I actually, and I'll fix that, I was like 15 years old maybe. It actually disturbed me to the point I didn't sleep that night. Just because, you know, it was hard to even, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, he was dead. I mean, he died 7 years before I was born. But it was like, you still sitting there going, wow. Wow. You know, you just couldn't imagine it. You know, you knew he died in a plane crash, but you didn't know how brutal it really was. And that actually, you know, it kind of scared me a little bit.
Yeah, it was rough. One of his friends, one of the guys that tries to really promote his memory as much as possible, Hank Taglia, who we tried to get on the radio show that one time, that he ended up handing us off to Pit Perrin. he has a picture of the actual crash in his office, and there was a story about that in one of the local papers around Brockton. But from my time helping out the Rocky Marciano Foundation and just running into people, you know, that you see when you're wearing the Rocky shirt that they put out, and what they tell you, it's kind of interesting how far his memory has traveled, you know, and his story still lives on. And a lot of people that you don't expect sometimes will come out of nowhere and be like, oh, yeah, I love that guy, you know, it's unbelievable. I don't follow his whole career. I know all about him.
Every year we go to a Italian festival. Actually, it's in Bridgeport. I bump into Harry Yorgi there a couple times. That's exactly where Harry's from. And last year, after we did that trip to Boston, I got my dad's Marciano shirt. You know, I always wear like a cutoff shirt there, and then my dad will wear his Rocky Marciano shirt. And he's like, you would never believe the amount of people that, you know, come up to him when he's wearing that. I'm like, man, that shirt is awesome. Where did you get it? Well, last year, I was obviously, like, I was just going to go to, you know, the Rocky Marciano Foundation.org, and you might be able to get some. Like, I don't know if that's the case anymore. I really doubt that it is. But oh, people ask all the time, that shirt is so badass. I'm like, where can we get one? I mean, you figure a lot of these people that are at this festival, you have some older people there. A lot of people are young guys. Dude, where do we get that shirt? You know, Rocky has it on. Not just because, you know, they mentioned him several times in the Rocky movies.
Right. I was actually out at a supermarket up here in New Hampshire when I was just visiting in July. And somebody in the supermarket saw the shirt and said, wow, you know, where do you get one of those? I haven't seen a Rocky Marciano shirt in my whole life. That's awesome. So, you know, I told them about the foundation and everything, and I used to work for him. And like, yeah, I saw every one of his fights. Unbelievable. And it's kind of interesting. At the same supermarket, I don't know if it was the same time, but I think it was the same week when I was up here, I ended up running into the guy that used to do the history for the newspaper that I used to work at.
Yeah.
So it was kind of funny. But there's also a guy, John Cameron, over in the United Kingdom, who I keep trying to get on our show himself, but he's writing a huge book about Rocky here. I mean, huge. It's so huge that they're not even going to be able to publish it on paper. They're going to do an e-book out of it. But John Cameron, he's got a website. I'm trying to locate it right now. I know I did a blog on it at some point. But give me a second, and I'll give the website where he's got some information on there. He was in touch with me at the end of August. And his book is going to be called Redemption. The Life and Death of Rocky Marciano, That's kind of a long website, but if you go to http://redemption, the life and death of Rocky, .weebly.com. And that's got his book proposal stuff on there, a couple sample chapters, some interesting stuff. It's a very intense book. I mean, he goes way back to Rocky's amateur career, and he's got such incredible detail. The only thing he's a little bit weak on is his grammar, but, you know, that's coming from an English major.
Yeah.
It's not that important. The details are the more important thing. But he's got all kinds of accolades from different people. Comments and reviews section there. Just got a ton of people there. You got Ferdy Pacheco's wife to comment on it even. Let's see. Editors, writers, all kinds of people. Even got Peter Marciano, I think, to comment. Yep, he says, I believe that you have a talent for writing. Peter Marciano.
Well, then, before we get Nicky on the line, because, I mean, when we get him on, Rich, I'd say we just, you know, ask him a few questions and let him go. Well, I think I learned my lesson the last time. You know, I tried to engage him in conversation. He just told me everything I knew was wrong. You know,
I mean, you gotta give the guy credit. He sounds pretty sprightly for his age, and
Yeah. Oh, true. Yeah, very true. I mean, I tried to mention. Remember the one thing he said? Rocky didn't eat pasta.
Okay.
He never ate pasta.
I investigated. Okay. I did a very in-depth investigative report on that, and
what did you find out?
I found out that it's not very likely that he never ate pasta, but he did eat a lot of soup rather than the other traditional Italian fare. He loved the soup, and that's in that book Undefeated by who is it? I got it right in front of me. Let's see, Everett M. Skahan. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that right, but it's S-K-E-H-A-N. It's one of the best books about Rocky that's out there, called Undefeated, Rocky Marciano, the Fighter Who Refused to Lose. And, you know, it just goes into very good detail. And it's just short enough, you know, not too long where you get lost in the whole thing. And it goes into a lot of his post-career activities, too. You know, he was more of a globetrotter after his career in boxing than he was before, I think, or during, at least. It's pretty interesting stuff, but when we get Nicky on, we'll have to ask in particular about the fight itself. I think he was the one that told us, wasn't he? Maybe it was Lou Duva. I don't know. Well, somebody we had on about Rocky talked about how there was some confusion before this fight that is the anniversary tonight, which they said might have been partially to blame for Rocky getting knocked down. There was some controversy before the fight. Somebody said something to somebody. I forget the exact situation. I mean, I'm bringing it up, but I'm, like, drawing a blank on the exact details. Something happened before the fight, and we talked to somebody who explained it, but something happened where something got confused. There was some little bit of controversy that Rocky was upset about, and that might have been why he was a little bit out of sorts to start the fight.
Yeah, I don't remember. I'd have to think about it myself. But I just want to go over like some of the things that, and obviously it's hard for me to remember. I mean, my great uncle died back in 1984. But like I said, I still remember him when I was a little kid. And the one I always tell you is when like him and my grandfather sat me down, and Rocky III had just come out, and you know we got to tell you about Rocky Marciano. I said, yeah, he just knocked out Clever Lang, and he smacked me in the back of the head and berated me for watching too much movie bullshit. Well, I remember him telling me about the fight, and I remember more specifically, even though he wasn't at this one in particular, but telling me about the Roll on the Stars of fight, their rematch, which was Rocky's second title defense after he knocked out Walcott in their rematch. But how, you know, he was like breaking down the Stars' arms with just the thudding punches, and he's like, you couldn't block his punches. He'd break your arms. He would just pound right through you. And I was like, God dang, you know? But obviously, you know, like I said, he died in 1984. I was 7 years old. So like I said, I don't really remember much about him except for, you know, telling me these stories. But my dad, obviously, you know, growing up with him, knowing him, obviously since birth, used to tell me the stories that Uncle Eddie would tell him about this fight. And even told him as my dad was full grown, so my dad could really appreciate it. And he was just saying, you know, how just incredibly insane it was in Philadelphia. Heavy Italian, because you figure Joe was from New Jersey, so, you know, he had a lot of fans there. And, you know, Rocky, you know, had pretty much all of South Philly, every Italian there was, like, you know, emptied out and got into that arena, so it was almost like a hometown fight for him. But they said the atmosphere was unbelievable, and you could really cut it with a knife. And I've been to some pretty big fights, and probably the best atmosphere I remember for a fight had to be Gotti Ward 3, which was down in Atlantic City. Cause, I mean, you could just feel the excitement. You could feel the tension. I mean, I was sweating when I walked out of the fight. I mean, I was more tired than the fighters were. And that was the feeling he said he got from that fight. And as loud as it was, and as how intense as it was, when that punch went off, it was like in slow motion. And the crack, he said, it sounded like somebody took a cannon and shot it off. And he goes, and it said it felt like almost minutes before Walcott finally hit the canvas. Because if you go back and you watch it again, like Rocky lands that shot, and Joe almost goes into like a genuflecting position. And he's unconscious, but he's like kind of caught up in the ropes. So Rocky almost slapped him with the left hand just to kind of pop him over. Because Joe would have been in a genuflecting position probably for an hour. But he said that was the one thing he said. He always told my dad that he would never forget just the sound of that punch landing. And like I said, Rich, I've been to a lot of big fights. I've been to big fights in small venues like the Blue Horizon. I've been to big fights in places like the Philadelphia Spectrum that sees 20,000 people. And I've been there where you could hear, but never to the sound where it said it sounded like a cannon going off.
Yeah, here's a great quote from Ed Fitzgerald, who I think was a sports reporter that followed Rocky. Rocky is not in there to outpoint anybody with an exhibition of boxing skill. He is a primitive fighter who stalks his prey until he can belt him with that frightening right-hand crusher. He is one of the easiest fighters in the ring to hit. You can, as with an enraged grizzly bear, slow him down and make him shake his head if you hit him hard enough to wound him, but you can't make him back up. Slowly, relentlessly, ruthlessly, he moves in on you. Sooner or later, he clubs you down.
And that's the truth. I mean, just the way he fought was just, you know, and as I said in my poem, like, he would walk through punches as if they were coming from flies. And, you know, I'm trying to think of the best way to say it, but he was the guy that was willing to stand in there and say, okay, I'm going to stand in front of you, and I want to see if you can back me up, but I'm definitely going to back you up.
All right, let's get Nikki on the phone before it gets past its bedtime. We want to keep him waiting.
Hello?
Nikki.
Go ahead.
Hey, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron. How's it going?
Not bad, buddy. Not bad.
Well, we're talking about the Rocky Marciano fight, and...
Which one?
The one it's the anniversary tonight. It's the 58th anniversary of the knockout of Joe Walcott.
That's the first fight.
The first fight, right.
First fight. Go ahead. In Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Right. So tell us a little bit about what you remember from that night.
Well, he trained for it, and we did a lot of road work and all that jazz. And 3 days before the fight, he calms down on the training, and he doesn't talk about it or anything. No one can bother him, and if they do, it doesn't faze him at all. But I wish him luck, and when he got out there, he took a beating right off the bat. And when they say never lead with your right, that's what he did, Walcott. He came with his right. Rocky blocked with the left. Rocky hit him with a right across the chin. And Walcott went down, but the middle run of the ring, the rope, held him up. But Rocky came around with the left hand and hit him on the right side of the face, and he knocked him right into the center of the ring. And that's when he got counted out. Rocky took a terrific beating on that fight, and we loved him for us. Then it was a big time afterwards in the hotel. He came up to me at the party, just the two of us, and he says, Nitch, I'm the champ. He never called me Nicky. And it was really, really beautiful.
Okay. And how did you first meet Rocky when you were kids? Do you remember?
When we were kids, Rocky was 2 years older than me. I'm 85 now. He's 87. He was 87 September 1st. When we were kids, I was the wise guy to pick a fight with you. I picked the fight. I sit on my fanny. Then he'd take care of you. Well, he does a job on you. About 2 hours later, he grabs me by the neck. He puts his arm around either left hand or right hand around my neck. And he never called me Nicky. He always called me Nitch. He says, Nitch, I'm going to kill you. I says, what for? He says, you're always starting fights. And I said, why don't you shut up? And he just walked away from me. Never, 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 never did he turn on me. And never had any ideas that he's going to become a fighter. Never even thought of that. How's that?
Good. Yeah, from what I remember, he was a big football player, right?
Yeah, he played ball. He was slow, but he was good. He played on the line. And when he hit you, when he got to you because he was slow, he'd do an awful job on you. The guy would be in tough shape once he had his hands on that guy.
And we also have Tony the Tornado on the line here. I think he's got a question for you.
Yeah, Nicky, I was just talking to Rich. I'm a Philadelphia guy, which is obviously the site where Rocky knocked out Jersey Joe to win the title. The old, it was the well, it was eventually called JFK Stadium. It was called the Municipal Stadium before that.
Yeah.
And as I was talking to Rich, you know, and Rich knows this obviously since we go back about 4 or 5 years, that my great uncle was at that fight in Philadelphia. You know, and, you know, I'm, you know, coming from an Italian family. I was saying, you know, my uncle, he died when I was 7. My grandfather died when I was 7. But I just remember them when I was a little kid always telling me about it. I remember the stories that my father would tell me that, you know, obviously came from my uncle. And my uncle had pretty good seats at this fight. And the original program and the original ticket stub were given to me when I was fighting. And they, you know, my uncle, great uncle's son, gave it to me as a gift, you know, just as a congratulations, you know, for my fight career. And I'll never forget the what he was telling me was, like, that night he was like, Jersey Joe shocked a lot of people by, you know, the fighting, you know, more aggressively than normal. And Rocky was behind on the cards, but they was like, they always had that feeling that it's not over, he can come back. And that's when, I mean, Jersey Joe, you know, was engaging him. But, you know, Rocky was able to pull that right hand out, and he said it sounded, you know, just like a bomb going off. And they said, like, watching the fight, when Joe went down, it was like in slow motion. It seemed like it took a few minutes for him to get in that kneeling position before Rocky toppled him over with the left. And that's one thing he said he would never forget. He said just the eruption of that stadium from all the Italians that were there, how much they just were just so ecstatic, you know, Rocky winning that title.
Right.
And like I said, it was, you know, when Rich proposed it to me tonight about doing a tribute show for the 50th anniversary, I mean, I was, you know, unbelievably excited. I mean, I was just down there tonight, just looking at that program. It's still beautiful, you know, 58 years later, and I was like, man, my uncle was there. I mean, he saw it happen. All the stories I hear, I'm like, he was there. Like, yeah. I was just, you know, Nikki, when it was coming to that 13th round and Rocky was behind, I mean, was there any, you know, how to say, was there still confidence that he was going to be able to pull it off, or were you getting nervous that, you know, he wasn't going to be able to get him in time?
No, he always had the confidence that he was going to do something. But that was very late in the fight, the 30th round. Very, very late. But he got a hold of him. He never ran out of gas. He got hurt, but he never ran out of gas. He was in excellent, excellent shape.
You helped him out with that, right?
Huh?
You helped him out with that, right? You did a lot of running with him.
I did the road work with him. We live in Brockton. We used to run to, I work for Electric Light Company, but I used to run with him on Friday night, Saturday all day, Sunday all day. Friday night, we used to run the Boston 23 miles, just one way. Then Saturday, we probably would go to Boston, but usually we used to go to Plymouth. That's another one. Then we used to go to Providence, Rhode Island. There's two ways of going to Providence, Rhode Island when we used to run. 32 miles one way, 38 miles the other way. 38 miles is over the Bangor Bridge in Fall River, Mass. And we didn't wear jogging shoes in them days. We had work shoes on. I was fast, and he had to keep up with me. At the training camp, he would keep up with me. And I worked in an electric light company, and he'd always give me the time to get the hell out of here and go work out with Marciano. I'd be there 4 days, 5 days, 6 days, 7 days. And we used to run all over the place. Up in Grossingers, up in, first place was in Greenwood Lake, New York, up near Bear Mountain. That's about 3 miles from Bear Mountain, and we used to run 3:45 in the morning, and we went from the training camp up to Bear Mountain, not all the way, naturally, and we go just about 8, 9, 10 miles. That's two ways, 8, 9, 10 miles, two ways. Providence was 32 and 38, and Boston was 23. Plymouth was 24, but it was very easy for me, and he loved me when I was around, and he just had a stamina all the time.
Did your legs never hurt after running 38 miles?
What's that?
Did your legs never hurt after running 38 miles? Jeez.
No, never bothered my legs. No, never bothered my legs. Never bothered his legs. No way.
So how did it work that he never convinced you to box?
Rocky had no idea. I used to ask him before he became a fighter. Never mentioned about him being a fighter. He had nothing about that at all. He figured he was going to be working in a shoe factory because our father's worked in a shoe factory. He never thought of becoming a fighter. But my cousin, Ali Colombo, who was in the Air Force, is the one that got him interested in the fight game. And he's the one that brought him to Al Weill in New York. And Rocky switched to becoming a fighter, and we used to live. The Edison would give me the time off. The Edison would let me go for about 5 days, 6 days, 8 days. We used to live at the Sloan House at 34th and 8th Avenue. I'd pay 85 cents. Rocky paid 85 cents. And Allie would pay 85 cents. Then we found out that the kid behind the counter was related to my late brother-in-law, and he was giving it to me for nothing, but I never told Rocky or Allie. And they were paying 85 cents a day. So at the Sloan House, we used to run. Rocky and I used to run at 3:45 in the morning from the Sloan House up to Central Park. There, the three of us would throw the football around. We'd always nail him, and I'd sit down, and Allie and Rocky would be throwing the football with each other. Then we'd run back home. And then we trained at the CYO Gymnasium, Eastside Gymnasium, Stillman's Gym about three times, that's all. But we went to Greenwood Lake, then from there we went to Liberty, New York, and trained at Grossingers. Grossingers had a resort in the town of Plymouth, Liberty, New York, and 3 miles away was Mrs. Grossingers' airport that she owned, which was empty, that had no planes, and it was a huge hangar. That's where he trained, and about a mile and a half from there was a cottage that we lived in. Allie, Colombo, myself lived in one room. Rocky lived in a separate room himself. Charlie Goldman was in another room, and Rocky's father was downstairs with Al Weill in two separate rooms. And we used to run up there. It was fantastic hills and everything else. And he was just wonderful, wonderful, wonderful supervision and wonderful.
Awesome. And what was it like growing up in Brockton? I mean, what was the day that Rocky...
Well, Rocky and I had no idea that I was going to become an electrician. I worked for Electric Light Company a long time. But his idea, you know, was he going to work in a shoe factory? Was he going to work on the DPW? He worked for the gas company, the Brockton Gas Company. And what happened, he got fired because he was eating on the job, and the foreman fired him right on the spot. And from there on, he did nothing. He did nothing. But Allie Colombo, who died, is the one who got him interested. He was my cousin, Allie Colombo.
And you went to that big tribute they had for Allie in Brockton there. I was there myself.
That's right, and I broke down because, to me, he was top shelf.
Mm-hmm.
Allie Colombo was top shelf.
Yeah, it was a hell of a night to honor him, too. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, he was top shelf. Allie Colombo was the best.
Yeah, and I'd love to see, you know, big ceremony whenever they put that plaque up for him, too. It's going to be really...
Well, here's the story with that statue now. This is going to be... It's unbelievable because they're jerking around and jerking around. I think it's the Boxing Commissioner that they want to go. It's going to cost... That statue they're going to build is going to cost over close to $350,000. And I don't know where that money's coming from. I think the Boxing Commission has something to do with it. But
there's no way
in hell they're going to get money from the city of Brockton because everybody's in tough shape.
Yeah. Well, from what I heard, it's supposed to be coming directly from the World Boxing Commission.
That's right.
WBC.
That's right, but who knows when it's going to come. They say it's going to come this time, then all of a sudden they say 6 months later. Now they say it's going to come in May of next year.
Yeah.
I don't believe it at all. I really don't believe it. It'll be outstanding, though. They named the stadium where Brockton High School plays, Marciano Stadium. Then they called the field, Ammon Colombo Field, Rocky's brother-in-law, my cousin. And they called that the field because he won so many Super Bowls, his brother-in-law, Ammon Colombo. Now his son took over, and now he's the coach at Brockton High School, and he's starting to do a pretty good job himself. Since he was a quarterback at Holy Cross, Peter Colombo. Yeah.
Yeah, I went to their Thanksgiving game last year, too. It was a good time.
Yeah, well, we don't go to the games anymore because, I don't know, I don't have any more interest. When Ammon was there, I had the interest. I don't have it anymore now. I'm 85 years old. I don't want to watch it anymore. Because Ammon was just superb. The father was superb. He won a lot of Super Bowls. Just 2 years ago, he had a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
And he's feeling pretty lousy. He's married to Rocky's sister, Betty.
Mm-hmm.
But the son that he has is a sweetheart. He was a quarterback for Holy Cross. Did a fine job. He comes to Brockton. He's a teacher at the high school in Brockton. And now he's the coach. And he's going to be very successful.
Well, what did you appreciate most about being friends with Rocky?
I don't know. I just loved him. Just loved him. I don't care how cheap he was and all that jazz. He was just wonderful. And he won the title September 23rd, 52. We got married October 12th. This is a Lithuanian-Italian wedding. 772 people at my wedding. Now, Rocky was supposed to have been an usher for me. On the telephone about a week and a half before, he says, I can't. I says, why? He says, because Bob Hope wants me to see him. And then I said some dirty words to him. I said, you're full of garbage. I said other words. And we hung up on each other. But he was supposed to have been there, but he didn't. So he sends me a record to play, and he knows I'm very emotional, and I played it in front of all the people there, and I'm bawling my eyes out because the way he was talking, you know, he's very, very sad. But I love the guy. I just love him. Love him.
And when he was fighting, you know, helping him out and everything like that, what was that like to be able to, you know and also be able to tell people, hey, you know, I know all about this guy. I'm working with him, you know, and he's the champion of the world.
The people loved him. A lot of people in my neighborhood, in the city, jealous of him because they think he's going to make a lot of money. And I don't know why, but they were jealous of him. But he didn't care what the hell they thought anyway. He never was bothered by any garbage and all that yet. The only one that could bother him was me. And he never turned on me. I just love him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was a sweetheart.
Tony, you got any questions?
No, man, I'm just listening to Nikki. I mean, I'm really enjoying this. Like I said, you know, growing up, you know, my whole family's always been a big-time fan of Rocky Marciano. It passed on to me. And one of the, Nikki, I hope you like this, one of the greatest compliments I ever received was back when I was fighting, I was 19 years old, and I'm a short guy. I'm not very fast. Mainly, you know, I could box a little bit, but mainly I wanted to, you know, mix it up and go punch for punch. And I was fighting a much taller guy out of another university. And the one judge, well, he's still actually a very prominent boxing writer out of the Philadelphia area. And he actually was giving me very openly criticizing me after the fight. And said, you know, didn't think much of my style, didn't think much of this, didn't think much of that. And I was a little bit hurt from it. And there was another fighter, and he was actually a very highly ranked amateur. He had fought in the Olympic trials back in 92. And I think he ended up losing to the guy that made it to the Olympics that year. I forget who it was. But he was there, and he was a friend of mine, and he pulled this judge aside. And he goes, I know you don't like this guy, and you don't think much of him. But he goes, didn't you see a little bit of Rocky Marciano in him? And not just because he's Italian. Because he walked through everything that guy could throw and broke him down. And after it was over, the judge came up to me. And 14 years later, we are still friends. And he still talks to me. And anytime he's always talking about, he always talks about, sometimes he'll call me Little Marciano. Because that's what this highly ranked fighter was calling me that day. And
yeah.
Obviously I was never on that level, but that was one of the greatest fight compliments I've ever gotten.
Very nice. Now, I'll change it now. Rocky Marciano was buried down at Fort Lauderdale. The wife and I were there at the burial ground. It's a small building. There's other bodies in there. He's planted inside the wall of the building, and then his name is underneath. 5 years after he got killed, his wife died of cancer of the lungs because she was a very heavy smoker, and I used to tell her, lay off those cigarettes. That's what got her. She's buried right beside him. Now, just a few years ago, about 2 years ago, his daughter got out of prison for armed robbery. Held up a bank with a girl and two guys down in Florida, served 8 years in prison. When the post office here in Brockton, Mass, about 4 months ago, was named the Marciano Post Office, the daughter never arrived to come to see this event. She stayed home. But the adopted son came up. His name is Rocky, and I didn't pay any attention to him because it didn't mean nothing to me. But it was very sad. But they named the post office Rocky Marciano Post Office.
Yeah, I saw that the Rocky Marciano Foundation was trying to involve Rocky Jr. a little bit more too. And there was some video online of him speaking at that event. He did highly of his father, but at the same time, he didn't really know much about his father. He was very young when he died.
But they keep saying about that statue. It was supposed to be a tall one, and I really don't believe it's going to be coming here. I really don't believe it. Because they keep saying it's postponed. That's a lot of baloney.
Yeah, apparently, you know, I've heard the same thing, because I know that they've been delaying it and delaying.
Oh, they're delaying all the time. That's four times now, I guess.
Yeah, I'd heard that it was supposed to be May or fall this year, and that didn't happen, so I'd be surprised if it does. But I know that you know, we have that big event in tribute to Allie, and there's definitely going to be a plaque for that. And I don't know whether they're going to involve it with the statue at all, but I think they're going to put it somewhere close to where the statue is going to go. And we might see that happen before the statue, but
I think they're going to put the statue right close to Marciano Stadium.
Right.
That would be beautiful. The people coming in for football games and all that jazz. That would be beautiful. Put it right there. I hope so.
And as far as, you know, knowing Rocky and all that, what would you say was your best memory of hanging out with him and watching him fight and all that?
Well, when we were kids, I was the wise guy. I was a thief. And we used to go to this candy store next to a theater in Brockton. Well, the manager of the theater was a Jewish boy. A terrific guy that we loved. And he used to let us in for nothing. And I used to go in that candy store with Rocky. And I would steal chocolates by the bars that they came in. And I would steal peanuts. Now, the peanuts, they would weigh them on a scale that came down and tell you how much you were old and all that jazz. And there was an old lady that worked in there. And I put my thumb or finger underneath that scale. She didn't see it. I held it up, and that gave me more for my 50 cents worth of peanuts. Now, when we went to the theater to eat, well, peanuts, okay, we didn't care about that. But we had to eat chocolates. Like, say, I used to grab the box of chocolates out of the drugstore. He used to wear a heavy winter coat. He'd open it up, and I'd take the chocolate. The box, and I was a baseball pitcher, he was a catcher, and I'd fling it at him fast, and I'd hit him right in the belly or the chest, and he'd close that coat. So now we went to the theater for nothing. Max Silverman, he was a beautiful man. And he let us in, we'd be sitting, it's in the back, and I open up the box, one chocolate for me, one chocolate for him. Two chocolates for me, two chocolates for him. We're counting. Then all of a sudden, his hand would come over and grab the box. And then the swearing would go on because he wanted the chocolates all by himself. And then I'd say, oh, and I said some dirty words, and the people say, shut up back there, and this and that. We never got thrown out either. Oh, yeah, I was a thief. I was a real bad one. I was a real bandito. He never was that type of guy. I was that type of guy. And I was the guy who started fighting from the little kids because I knew he could take care of them.
Yeah.
But he never had any idea that he was going to become a fighter. Never had that in his mind, that he's going to become a fighter. My cousin Ali Colombo was the one who got him interested.
Yeah, I remember reading about, you know, how when Ali saw him fight, he was so impressed, even though Rocky didn't do as well as he thought he should have.
Yeah.
Ali came up and convinced him, you know, there's something there, and you need to develop it.
Yeah.
So that was really intense, you know, being able to be involved in something in Brockton to honor Ali for that, because it's so often looked at as sort of a secondary person, you know, when he was really Rocky's right hand guy for a lot of the years. That
you got it right there.
The championship.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have the feeling, too, that Ali was the type of guy that wouldn't have wanted the accolades, but he would have appreciated them.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
he would straighten me out at training camps if I said something, and he'd grab a hold of me, and then he'd use some dirty words at me to shut up, and I'd shut the hell up. Oh, yeah. And 3 days before a fight, no matter what fight it was, you can't talk to Rocky. This is before he became champ, then when he was champ. You can't talk to him. Nobody can bother him. And Bob Hope, 4 days before a fight, couldn't even make him laugh. He didn't laugh at all at anything that Bob Hope told him.
Cool. And what was his best character or his best quality as a fighter, you think?
What do you mean, best qualities of a fighter?
Like, what was, obviously he had a right hand, but as far as...
Both hands were deadly with Rocky Marciano. Both hands. He could dump you with both hands. Inside, outside. He could take a beating, but he didn't like a left hook. A left hook, Joe Lewis nailed him. Walcott nailed him. Archie Moore nailed him with a left hook.
Yeah.
But he recovered himself quickly. Now, in the championship fight, he went down the first round. And he was getting beat every round. And then all of a sudden, when they say, don't lead with your right, Walcott's up against the ropes. He came around with the right hand, and Rocky blocked with the left and hit with the right. Then he came around with the left hand. Now, in Providence, Rhode Island, Rocky, before he became champion, used to fight at the Providence Auditorium. Manny Almeida was the promoter. On one side of that stadium, that held about 8,500, 9,000 people. On one side of the stadium were all Italian people from Federal Hill, good guys and mostly bad guys. Mm. Every time he was in that ring with a fighter, they could telegraph either the right or the left hand. When they saw it coming, all in unison, they would holler out, "Tim." And they would go down. They never got up. He hurt you. He always hurt you. Something badly. He did a job on Carmine Bingle in Madison Square Garden. Almost killed him.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Because Nadiello gave him shots above his hat there. I was right there. And he almost died right there. Carmine Bingle was a great fighter, too. He had a good record, and Rocky had a good record, but Rocky got the best one. Yeah, he hurt a lot of people badly, very, very badly. Billy Reynolds, he was up in Fairfield, Connecticut, heavyweight. Fought him in Providence. He knocked him out. He didn't come to for quite a while. He was out badly. Yeah, he was. Rocky and I were the same height, 5'11". And never, when we were kids, was he a wise guy. I was the wise guy. I was back to fight.
So you got him into fights a lot as a kid?
Not really. No. I just was miserable, I'd be rotten. And then he'd have to fight for me. And he never turned on me, but he used to scold me. The words that he used, I don't want to use on the radio.
Go ahead, burn our radio show.
Oh, that's unreal if I use the words that he used. Yeah.
Just the other night on TV, they were on the one ESPN channel. They were doing a Rocky Marciano tribute. They showed highlights of the both fights with Walcott, actually the 13th round knockout, then his one round. Title defense knockout of a walkout. They showed the Rolling with Stars fight, and they showed parts of both Ezra Charles fights. And talking about guys that he beat up pretty good, that second fight with Stars, that's one my great uncle obviously told me a lot about when I was a kid, how he just broke through. He didn't get around his defense. He just went straight through it.
Yeah.
And the Stars was never the same after that fight.
Yeah, Roland Lozada was a good fighter. Rocky ruined his career. Never fought anymore afterwards.
When you were talking a few minutes ago about, you know, short, compact punches, one thing I do when I train, you know, especially younger fighters now, teenagers or guys that are just getting into it, sometimes you get these, you know, these hot shots that want to come into the gym and they want to, you know, haul off on the bag and everything. And, hey, working on a heavy bag is great, but you got to do it right. And they want to wind up and, you know, look like you're doing these Superman punches. And I tell them, I said, no, that's not the way you got to do it. I said, you can generate punches from 6 inches away. And they tell me that you can't do that. I said, okay. And that's the first thing I do is I break out the tape of the walk-out fight. And I said, look where that punch starts from. It travels less than a foot.
Yeah.
From where he started it to where he landed it was only about 8 inches. And I said, and that hit him with 184 pounds of power and put him right out. So don't tell me you have to take these wild, crazy swings. But learn how to turn your hips. Learn how to, you know, really drive. Use your toes. Use your legs.
Yeah.
That's one thing about Rocky. I mean, Rocky, for, you know, the guy, he said he's about 5'11", 180. He was a prime, about 185 to about 188.
Yeah.
That was the thing. It was all power. And he knew how to generate, you know, complete power and twist with every punch he threw. So no matter where he hit you, it was going to be devastating.
Very true.
One of my favorite stories about Rocky from the book Undefeated was about a guy who used to spar with Rocky, and he took such tremendous body shots in one sparring session that the next time he come back, he had a catcher's protection pad strapped around his stomach. And he said, let's go now, Rocky.
Yeah, he, when we were kids, he never turned on me. And I used to call him names and everything else. But he never, he just grabbed me, put his arm around my neck, and if I got him, I think he would have given me a hell of a job by squeezing that neck, but he didn't do that. He would threaten me, but never turned on me. And I used to help him with one of the kids. He had a paper route. One time he had 85 customers, another one he had 140, and he used to give me a dime a week. Sometimes he didn't pay me at all. And I said, when are you going to pay me? He said, shut up, and I'll pay you. So then I said to him, I said, later on, I said, why don't you quit this paper route because it's a pain in the ass. He quit the route.
Yeah, I had a paper route when I was growing up, too. It's a good first job to have, you know.
I had a paper route, too.
Yeah, I remember one time it was with the Boston Globe, and they sent me a pamphlet when I started, and it lists, like, all the famous people in history who ever had paper routes. And there's a lot of presidents that started out. That was their first job, the paper route, so.
Now, when Rocky Marciano trained for fights, he always had sparring partners at the training camp. Well, this heavyweight, this is at Grossinger's. This heavyweight from Providence, Rhode Island, Wee Willie Wilson, was sparring with Rocky. Now, in the crowd, in the audience, were movie stars, movie producers. I met a whole bunch of them. The only one I never got to meet was Frank Sinatra, who I wanted to meet. So anyways, this black kid from Providence was trying to put Rocky away in the round. They went six rounds, and then they went eight rounds. But this was six rounds. He wanted to put him away. And they just went to six rounds after this kid tried to do something. Now, the next day, same two are sparring, Rocky and this guy. So Rocky, first round, combination, left hook to the stomach, left hook to the chin, then a right cross straight from the right side, and he went down. Now in the dressing room after about 3 hours. He goes up to Wee Willie Wilson while he's on the stretcher, while he's on the bed there. And he says, "Lee Willie, you got a little fresh out there yesterday with me." He says, No, champ. "Oh, yes, you did. You got to look impressive in front of all those people." No. That kid never came back to train with Marciano anymore. He was a terrific kid, too, Lee Willie Wilson, but he tried to put him away. Yeah.
That'll make you think twice.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he never, when he was in training, he's not out there to put the sparring partner away. He just wants a good workout. And that's what he used to get, a good workout. They had blacks, he had a whole bunch of them, though, very, very good. Then he had the fellow from South America, Cesar Brion. And he was way ahead of Rocky in the ratings and all that jazz. But then he started going down the tube, and he retired.
Yeah,
I met some great fighters. I met some wonderful people, and I met a lot of bad people. And those bad people loved me because they would come up and ask me at the training camp alone, "Nicky, what's the story? What's the story? How are we going to bet?" I says, "You're going to bet on Marciano to win, aren't you? What round?" Oh, I says, "Oh, no, pick rounds." "He's going to knock him out, all right? He's going to knock him out. Then Rowley's going to knock him out." And that's what he did. 49 victories. 43 knockouts.
You're only wrong 3, then, right?
6 decisions. 11 one-round knockouts.
Yeah.
How about that? He's a hand.
Incredible. Well, I think it's even more incredible the fact that he did it at a weight that's considered cruiserweight now.
Then the power of his punch was tested. I forget the proving ground, the federal proving ground. Was equal to an armor-piercing bullet. That's how powerful that punch was.
Yeah,
it was just equal to an armor-piercing bullet.
Yeah, they had that. They actually had a movie, Rocky IV, where the guy was punching into a pad to estimate the force, and he was the Russian guy. You know, I don't know if you ever seen that movie.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see what Rocky would have registered on that machine with his right. But anyway, Nick, you got anything else you wanted to add to what we've already talked about? I don't want to keep you up too late.
Too late? You know something? I'm in bed early every night.
Yeah?
My wife had to wake me up just now, a half an hour before you called me. That's no baloney. I always went to bed early. Now, I still work out 3 days a week.
Yeah.
At a gymnasium in Brockton, Mass. They call it the WOW, Workout World. It's all over the place. Now, this place here has 500 members. Now, who belongs is my wife, my daughter's a school teacher, and myself. The three of us belong to this world. 500 members. 485 are brothers and sisters. We're the only three honkies that go in there Monday, Wednesday, Friday. But my daughter goes every day.
Yeah.
And they love me to death. They come from Kenya, Ethiopia, Sudan, Indonesia. It's unbelievable. They call me Brother Nick. I love them, though. I love them.
They're homie.
Oh, yeah.
That's great. I'm glad to hear that. Seems like, you know, it's like a Brockton thing. You know, all those guys that grew up in that generation, stay in shape and keep themselves fit and... you know, there's such a wealth of information on Rocky. It's always good to talk to you because, you're keeping that history alive, everybody you talk to about him. So that's great.
I just love them. I just love them. I always love them.
Yeah, and, whatever we can do, I'm still running that website, Rocky49Wins.com. So, whatever we can do.
Remember this, too, on his record. He had 11 one-round knockouts. Out of 49 fights, 11. That's a lot of knockouts.
He didn't like to wait around. He wanted to get his money right away.
Oh, they made a lot of money on Marciano.
Yeah.
And they used to see me at the training camp. See, when he got killed, it was the day before his birthday. He was heading to the town of Des Moines, Iowa, the capital, because they were giving him a party. And all these guys are all gamblers. and they were going to take good care of him, but he met his, he's going to kill him. Terrible, terrible guy. Terrible way to die.
Yeah.
And how he died is that he was going to that party, and just he and the pilot. They went up high in the air, and all of a sudden, I guess it was a tremendous windstorm, and then it came down, crashed the trees, chopped his head right off.
Yeah, I remember reading...
That was a closed casket.
I remember reading a lot of detail about the actual field that he crashed in.
Yeah.
Where it was one giant oak tree in the middle of a cornfield that just came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, fate. It's just...
And his wife.
It works.
And I used to tell a wife, lay off those butts. She says, why? I says, that's not too good for your lungs, and especially you inhaling Lucky Strike smoke. She died.
Right.
She died because of that.
Yeah, smoking's never good.
No.
I was telling Rich, before we got to the air tonight, you know, growing up being a big Marciano fan, and back when I was around 15 years old, you know, I went to, a local movie store where you could buy, you know, VHS tapes, and they had a couple, you know, where they had, like, tape on Joe Louis, tape on Marciano. So I bought all them, and I bought one that was about all the great heavyweight punchers, and then a year later, they had done a documentary on some fighters on HBO, and Rocky was one of them, and that was the first time I found out about the plane. I knew he had died in the plane crash, but it was the first time I found out the details. And then when they said it was a closed casket, you know, as he, was decapitated, I couldn't sleep that night. I really couldn't. I mean, it actually really disturbed me, even though, I mean, I knew he had died in the plane crash. And before you got on the air tonight, I was reading a poem that I wrote about Rocky. I wrote it about 11 years ago. And the one thing I said, which was the second to the last verse, was, the only time he lost and it proved to be the first was when his airplane struck a tree and into flames it burst.
Yeah.
And
yeah, right. Yeah, very, very sad.
But he definitely lives on in history. I mean, even my dad. My dad's really not much of a boxing fan. His own father boxed when he was younger, but my dad... they only watched boxing when Tyson was doing his thing. And he said to me the other day when I brought up Rocky that, you know, back in his day when he was growing up in the 40s, Rocky was all people talked about, you know. Well, that was the sport, boxing. It wasn't like it is now where it's you know, football is bigger and baseball is bigger. Back then it was like boxing was a very huge sport and it was an American thing, you know. That,
yeah. You're right, you're right.
Everybody enjoyed, and Rocky was one of those people that just was always on everybody's mind, and people just talked about him a lot.
Here's another story. My wife is a tour director, but this time the wife and I went to my mother and father's hometown in Italy, right near Naples, and I asked my aunt while we were there if I could borrow the automobile, and she gave it to me for 3 days with Vatican. We went to the Vatican, and after 3 days, the wife and I sat down on a bench outside the Vatican, and about 150 yards away, I saw this policeman, Italian, dressed to kill, and I saw him take his hat off, a hat like Errol Flynn, and I know he was sweating like hell, so I went up to him. I had back glasses on, and I says, I sat talking Italian to him. And then he said to me, where are you from? In Italian. I said, Brockton, Massachusetts. He said, take those glasses off. I took them off. He said, Nicky Sylvester. Then my dirty words came out to say, how'd you know about this? He says, Nicky, I'm from Providence, Rhode Island, and your picture is on the mirror of the ringside cab that the promoter, Manny Almeida, owns. And we hugged and kissed each other. We wouldn't let go of each other. He was so handsome, about 6'2". He was better looking than Errol Flynn. And I said, you're going to die here? He said, yeah. He said, I'm not going back to Providence. I'm going to die right here. Well, he's dead now. He's been gone about 25 years ago. Yeah. Very, very sad. They love him in Italy, too.
Oh, I bet.
Oh, very, very much.
Yeah, he's an Italian icon, that's for sure.
Yep.
All right, well, you got any final thoughts, any last tribute, last word tribute?
No, not really, not really.
Mm-hmm.
Just wanted to talk to you about him. That was very nice of you to call me.
Yeah, you were the first person I thought of when we figured out that this our radio show is usually on Thursdays, and this Thursday just happens to be a big Thursday in his career. And I figured we hadn't really talked about him except offhand a few times on the show, so it's been a while, and I wanted to get back to it, and right on the calendar in front of me, I got the Foundation calendar, so.
Thank you, thank you, thank you very much.
Yeah. And
thanks.
I just hope that you know, you keep it up. You're a great guy. You're very... you know, you get all your faculties together at your age, which is it's not necessarily rare, but it's you know, it's a great thing to be able to have somebody who knew Rocky firsthand to be able to tell us all these stories and to still do it at your age. You know,
I don't have enough adjectives to describe them. I just love them. Just love them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad you could share with us, and definitely we'll keep in touch as much as possible and let you know. Whatever we put up in the future, and there's a guy over in the UK that's writing a book about Rocky too. So I'm going to try to
tell him about me.
Yeah, definitely. He's interested in talking to you already. He listened to our interview on one of the websites, and was just ecstatic to be able to get all that information out of our interview the first time.
Fabulous! Thank you.
So it's across the pond already.
That's it. Very nice.
Or the internet. Well, thanks a lot, Mickey, and best of luck, and I guess you can go back to bed now, right?
Thanks very, very much.
Right.
See you later.
Good night.
Thanks, Mickey. Have a great day, man.
Okay, buddy. Bye-bye.
All right, so that's Mickey Sylvester. And what?
I think it went better than the first time we had him on.
Yeah, I mean...
It went great tonight, actually. Really good.
Yeah, some of the stuff I recognized. I mean, I remembered as the same old Mickey that we had the first time. But a lot of the stuff was a little new slant here, a little different angle there.
Yeah.
I remember the Wee Willie Wolf story that he told a little different.
Rich, I did a better job tonight, you and I. We kept away from the topics that we knew, you know, he wouldn't like Rocky eating pasta and Peter.
Right.
Wow. So it was more on a pleasant note.
Yeah. And what a wealth of information. I mean, I didn't ask him about that controversy before the fight. I probably should have, but, you know, just the rest of the stuff on growing up with Rocky and how he used to get Rocky angry at him, but he'd never turn on him. And it's kind of like what we talked about before on the show, where as a fighter, you know, the people that always think, oh, you know, he's an a-hole, he's a troublemaker, he's a fighter. You know, but most fighters that you meet are going to be the type that are going to be very, you know, submissive or gentle people. They're not going to cause problems, but if it comes to it, they're going to finish, you know, the job. They're gonna end up fighting somebody, but you really have to push their buttons to get them to fight outside the ring and really get them angry in most cases. And, you know, people kind of have a tough time understanding that mentality. But, I mean, you think about it. When somebody's fighting for sport, the last thing that you want to do is abuse it. You know, kind of like the Karate Kid. You know, you're supposed to use it only for self-defense. And
I was watching that last night.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
The old classic.
They still have a lot of like HBO and shit, and every time it's on, I watch it.
Yeah, I haven't watched it in forever, but it was a great
thing. You know what, I got something. You know, I've been actually told that I should do this, you know, a few months ago, and I'm going to start, you know, but, you know, I'm really YouTubing it up now. People, this is not even a boxing topic anymore. This is just me being obnoxiously like myself. And I was bitching about that latest Nightmare on Elm Street movie that came out, and I was saying all the things are wrong with it. But I was saying it in a funny way. Right? People are like, you know, you got a good knack for just being funny but making good points at the same time. Well, if you should do movie reviews, it's like, you know, you already talk it up when you talk about boxing, just do it on movies now. And
there's a website. It's called lunch.com.
Yeah, but I'm not doing written reviews. I'm doing, like, video reviews. Like, videos of me, like, sitting there talking about this movie and why I think it sucked. No, I love The Karate Kid, but I'm going to wrap all three of them. Or I'm not even going to count the one with Hillary Swank in it. But I'm going to wrap the first three Karate Kids into one. I'm going to give you a one-minute review of what I think was wrong. Okay, first of all, okay, this kid comes out, and he's getting beaten up by these bullies. Well, he's hitting on the girlfriend of the biggest bully. Why do the other bullies got to beat him up? You know, the other guy can obviously handle him on his own rather easily. Why do the other ones got to beat this kid up? Okay, fine. So he gets in this karate tournament to face them all. But the night before the tournament, he's like, you know, this is the way he's going to get his respect. He's going to face him in the tournament, and he's going to get his respect. But the night before, he's like, I'll probably lose in the first match anyway. Well, the guy he fought first match was some other schmel. He lost to him, but then how did he get his respect from these other guys? So that was obviously the movie part right there. And then, of course, he gets to the other guy at the final match. So, okay, blah, 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 he wins. So now he goes over to Okinawa, and he's, you know, fighting this guy. Now, Mr. Miyagi, the whole time, is always talking about, have you ever been in fights as a kid? He's, sure, I fight all the time. I hated it, okay. But then they get over there, and they realize, okay, how do you win here? You know, there's no points. You fight to the death. I mean, Mr. Miyagi killed a lot of people growing up. Okay, that's one thing I get out of it. Okay, so fine. He fights. And he has this fight to the death. It's almost like a karate street fight, you know, against this, you know, guy. He's going to fight until the loser dies. Comes into Karate Kid 3. He's back in the tournament, and he's getting slapped around by this other karate guy, and he's crying like, I'm afraid of this guy. It's like, dude, you just fought a fight to the death. Mm-hmm. You fight this guy, he scored 1 point on you, who cares? Okay, you lost your karate championship title. You're still alive. So that was my little one-minute review of the Karate Kid movies, and I love them, but that's why I kind of think they were ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, Hollywood always is. I mean, they'll take this.
Wait till I get doing this remake of Nightmare on Elm Street. I'm going to tear out. Like I said, I'm only 6 months late on it, but I am going to tear it a new asshole when I get to it.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to be in Hollywood. They always screw things up, you know, especially books that are made into movies. Pet Sematary was one of my favorite books as a kid, and they totally butchered that story when they put it into a movie. And the most scary part was for me, when reading the book, was the part with the sister that had the scoliosis or whatever, and... you know, they had like 2 seconds of it in the movie. But that was like a very significant
I never read the book, and I sure don't remember that movie. I haven't seen the movie in like 15 years.
Yeah. But, you know, it was a long book, so it's tough to get into the movie. But the other story, the one that really pisses me off, is The Departed. I mean, that's, you know, being spread around, oh, this is all about Whitey Bulger, but... You know, the real Whitey story is so much more intriguing. It's so much more diabolical. And, you know, this was just kind of wrapping it up with the state police rather than the FBI and all that kind of different stuff that was involved in that whole saga. But that's off topic. We do have a lot of boxing and MMA to talk about. Unfortunately, the boxing has kind of brought back the old boxing is dying. With the last big fight with Shane Mosley and Sergio Mora going to a draw, 12-round draw.
I did not see that fight. I heard that the decision should have definitely gone to Mosley. I heard it was not a very eventful fight. I'm glad I didn't see it. I don't remember where I was last Saturday night, but yeah, I was at a Philly game, getting loud and obnoxious. By the way, I was on TV last week.
Oh. Nice.
Yeah, I looked awesome.
Did you get it on tape?
No. I shouldn't say I was on TV. I was on the big fan screen twice.
Oh, well, there you go.
Me and this girl were wearing identical American flag sequin hats, and we were dancing.
Cool. And are the Phillies going to the playoffs?
Oh, yeah.
They got 9 games left in Magic number 4.
Nice.
You know what? Rich, you're going to enjoy this because I'm going to tell you right now. Last year, the Philly Jamaica made it to the playoffs. They were the best team in the National League, but they were definitely not the best team in baseball. Their rotation was going through some problems. Their bullpen was going through some problems. The only thing that was saving them was their offense. Well, this year, they've had some major injuries. All the guys are coming back now. Their top three pitchers, because Cole Hamels last year was not pitching well. He's pitching fantastic now. 3 earned runs in the last, 35 innings. Roy Halladay, you know all about him, and Roy Oswalt. They call him the 3 aces. And, so you got that in front of your rotation. You got a good offense. The bullpen's pitching better.
I don't care about the Twins. I don't care about the Rays. Well, I'd like to beat the Rays again just to beat them up again. I don't care about the Texas Rangers. I want to beat the Yankees after last year. And I know you would enjoy that. That would make you happy, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah. I don't know who's going to be the wild card or who's going to be the division leader there, but Red Sox.
The Yankees are in the division, man. The Yankees are 2.5 up now.
Yeah. Well, you never know. No series against each other before the season ends, but that could change things.
I've worked for years. I never gave two shits about the Rays because they were like a joke. But then they got good and the Phillies played them in the World Series. I came to not really like them just because of their piece of shit stadium and there's a bunch of retards down there with cowbells. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard of.
How about the fan that screams at the umps all the time?
Yeah,
he's freaking loud.
I'll call someone an idiot if I feel that you need to be called an idiot. Well, we've only got 30 minutes left, so let's get back to our boxing and MMA and not too much baseball. Well, like I said, I did not see the Mosley-Moore fight last week. I heard that it definitely should have gone Mosley's way, but it wasn't an exciting fight, not one of... Well, Moore is never an exciting fight. It's just his style, you know, and he's not a very likable guy. So he's a guy you want to see get like the shit kicked out of him. Unfortunately, his style never lets that happen. He's really going to need Shane Mosley's, really passed his best. He would need to fight a guy like a Cole Pavlik. They were talking about that fight a year or so ago. My one friend Mike hates Moore so bad when they were going to have him fight Kelly Pavlik before Pavlik had the staph infection and it was going to be in Atlantic City. My friend Mike, you will get a ticket to see this. He's like, I want to see him get knocked out cold in person. Also on the end of the card, interesting note, young up-and-coming fighter really is looking interesting. Of course, I draw a blank on his name right now. But he was fighting Carlos Baldomir. I saw Carlos fight in Atlantic City a couple years ago with a stoppage over Arturo Gatti. And Carlos had a... chin was unbelievable. I mean, his chin was just fantastic. This guy knocked him out cold with one punch. Like I said, killing me that I'm forgetting his name right now. Can't get a hold of you two or your boxer. I have to look it up.
It was all knockouts except for the main event.
That,
it was all knockout wins. Even Kalisha West knocked her opponent out. So they were actually talking a lot about how that kind of...
And I can't remember it.
I'll tell you in a second. Barrera.
I kicked myself.
Ali Chiba tonight.
What?
I'll have you know. Ali Chiba is fighting tonight. I bet you didn't know that.
Nice. That's one of our personal favorites, even though I've never seen him fight.
Marco. Antonio. The Beast Assassin.
What?
Who did he fight? Marco Antonio Barrera. His nickname is the Babyface Assassin. Well, this doesn't list that fight, unfortunately.
The Baltimore fight? It should be on the, if you're on a box track, I can look at that fight card list.
I wrote in Marco Antonio Barrera, that's why.
Dumbass.
You said Barrera, he was fighting being a middleweight.
Aldemir.
Carlos Aldemir.
Whoops. I don't know how I got that name in my head.
Yeah, no shit.
Carlos Baldomir Manuel, right?
Yeah.
All right, he's 45-3. No, 45-13. And he lost to Saul Alvarez, who is 33.
Saul Alvarez, that's right. Saul Alvarez is a good-looking fighter. You know, a Mexican kid, got tremendous power, obviously, to knock Carlos Baldomir out. But, Rich, I'm going to tell you, if you go on a Facebook, and it's something I think you'll really enjoy. I got a friend of mine. I know him from Marion Anderson Rec Center in Philadelphia. I've known him, you know, when I was first starting out. And he's a guy I send you some articles from, that guy George Hansen.
Right.
He puts these unbelievable boxing trivia questions on his Facebook page. I get a lot of them right. There's some I can't even get right. He'll put shit on there like, who was the first boxing, like, radio broadcast? Shit, I don't know.
Who is it?
Who was he or who was it?
What was it? What was the answer?
I don't remember. He put that one on, like, a week or two ago.
Oh.
But he puts ones on, like, two or three times a day. I've gotten a lot of them right.
Oh, wow. I just found the mismatch of the century going down in Georgetown, Guyana. A four-round middleweight fight this Friday. Howard Eastman, 46-6, with 36 knockouts at middleweight, fighting Queasy Jones. Squeezy. K-W-E-S-I. Queasy Jones. 5-1 with 3 knockouts.
Queasy. Well, I don't know, man. Howard Eastman's really, really up against his prime.
Well, that's why he's fighting.
I remember when he fought Bernard Hopkins about 6 years ago, and he gave a respectable account of himself, but he lost about every round. But after that, I mean, he got knocked out a couple times, he got beaten up a couple times. He is definitely a guy that's well past his best.
That's why they put him in a mismatch.
Very true.
Well, at least it's on a mismatch on paper, we'll say. We'll see if it's a real mismatch. The fight is over. But it's only 4 rounds, too, so it buzzes them. Not seeing anything jumping out at me yet, but really Friday here on Box Rack. I know that there's a big UFC card on this weekend with Frank Mir and Krokop on the main. The main. And there's been some talk of I being injured, but the fight's going on. It's been kind of funny just looking at all the press about this eye injury, like the fight's going to be stopped because of it. And, I don't think it's going to happen. It obviously can't happen. You can't cancel that fight now. It's too late. So eye injury or not, Mirko Krokop's going to fight Frank Mir. And I don't even understand why this fight is being made. Because, I mean, I watched the last fight that Krokop had, and it was against a guy who idolized him. And the guy is Pat Barry. He broke his hand and his foot against Krokop, and he was beating the hell out of Krokop at first, and then he kind of laid off. And he was such an idol to this guy that I really believe, honestly, that he took it easy on him because he was just had so much respect, too much respect in a lot of ways for the guy. And so Krokop won, and, you know, for a guy that probably should have retired after that kind of fight to come back and fight a guy like Frank Mir, I think is a mistake. But I think anything can happen in that sport as well, and it could be an interesting fight. But I just want to put it out there so that people aren't expecting what they shouldn't. You know, don't expect to watch the world's greatest fight in the main event. I don't even think it should be in the main event. I think it should be a secondary fight. They could have come up with something better, but... You know, we'll see. As we all know, I was wrong about James Toney, so I could be wrong about this.
Oh, I saw that Butterbean video you sent me. That wasn't very impressive.
No. I mean, I think it wasn't impressive both ways. It wasn't very impressive for Butterbean, but it wasn't very impressive for Pujanowski either. I mean, first of all, it was in Poland. So, you know, whether it was rigged or not, I don't know. Can't really say, but if Pujanowski lost in Poland, there would have been a revolt, I think.
I mean, I don't know if it was rigged or not or anything. I mean, I don't know, you know, much about, you know, the guy that he fought. But Butterbean, I mean,
Rich, I think you're about to agree with me. Tell me he's not too heavy.
He's not what?
Tell me he's not too heavy.
Well, yeah, for MMA. I mean, once he got taken down, he was helpless. He couldn't even roll off his back. But the thing that blew my mind was he didn't seem to be trying to get off his back. He just kind of was okay with it, but... also, you know, what really didn't impress me about Pujanowski is those punches. I mean, I didn't never done MMA, but I wouldn't have had trouble taking those punches. I wouldn't have felt foggy or didn't seem like any of those would even leave bruises the way that he was hitting them. And, you know, you got to look at a guy like Brock Lesnar and the way he throws hammer fists, they call them. Which is, you know, coming down from the top position with the side of your fist on the guy's head. And Pujanowski just doesn't seem to have the leverage and the ability to throw powerful punches like that. He's just not developed in the sport enough yet to be able to land knockout blows from that position. But Brock Lesnar is a guy that's built sort of in a similar fashion. He's obviously a little bit taller and bulkier. But he's got those big muscles, and he can do it. So, obviously, it's possible. And I'd like to see Pujanowski really take it seriously and really, you know, develop his talent better before going into his next fight, if he does fight anybody significant. But, you know, Butterbean is way past his prime, too. And he wasn't really into this fight, I don't think. It wasn't really something he even wanted to do. He just ended up doing it. And to do it in Poland in front of all Pujanowski's fans, and I don't know. You know, obviously, there could have been a consideration, too. We got to build this guy's record. You know, he has to fight a big guy, somebody with a name. And Butterbean's also running this Mushin promotion, which I went to in Worcester, and he was doing the promoting. So you could think... Also, you know, whether it's rigged or not, you know, it's better for Butterbean to lose that fight if he wants to promote Pujanowski. So, whatever happens, it's not his best day, but, you know, it doesn't prove anything about Pujanowski either. So, don't expect him to be the next UFC heavyweight champion.
Yeah.
We'll see. But as far as boxing goes, I don't really see anything jumping out at me coming up this weekend. There's a fight going on in the Philippines at minimum weight for the WBC International Minimum Weight title between Muhammad Rockman, 62-8, with 31 knockouts and 5 draws, and Denver Coelho. 21-4 with 12 knockouts and 5 draws as well. That's tough to get 5 draws. Fuck. Especially at that weight. Take a lot of punches over 12 rounds that way. Let's see. We got something going on. Speaking of Poland and Warsaw, this Saturday we have a cruiserweight championship fight. Krzysztof Wlodarczyk, 43-2 with 1 draw and 32 knockouts, fighting Jason Robinson, 19-5 with 11 knockouts. I don't know if that's going to be much of a fight, but that's for the WBC Cruiserweight title. And the co-main event, an interesting fight at Cruiserweight between Thomas Hutkowski, 18-0 undefeated with 12 knockouts, and Zakaria Azauzi, who's 11-1 with 9 knockouts, 1 draw. Both have 1 draw. That's for the WBC Youth World Cruiserweight title and the vacant WBC Baltic Cruiserweight title. And in the UFC news also, I wanted to mention the Ultimate Fighter show this past week. It was pretty interesting. We saw the debut fight of, well, not the debut fight. He had to fight his way into the house on the first episode, but we saw his first fight in the competition in the house, a guy named, well, they dubbed it Bruce Leroy. Kind of interesting. He's a black guy who has some, obviously, more talents in the martial arts than the mixed martial arts, I think, but he's developing. And I was watching the show, and I actually noticed that he had a position for what they call a triangle choke, where you get the legs around the guy's arm and head, and it's, you sort of make a triangle by tucking your foot behind your knee on the other leg and just choking a guy by cinching it tight. And it seemed like the guy didn't even know what that move was, because he just had it so many times. And I said, you know, this guy doesn't even know what a triangle is. And then his corner yelled at him to, you know, sink it in, and he did it, and that's how he won the fight. So it was kind of weird how that happened. But the Ultimate Fighter this year, this season, is with Josh Koscheck against George St. Pierre. They're welterweights. George St. Pierre is the title holder at welterweight, and he's got a pretty good team together against Koscheck, who's a real big up-and-comer. He's been around forever. He's one of those guys that used to be sponsored by Zion, so he's been around. But before we finish off on boxing, I wanted to mention that Terry Lane and Let's Get It On Promotions is Terry and Tommy Lane there. Their father's dream for them to get into boxing. They're carrying it out with Let's Get It On Promotions. They have a fight this weekend with Joey Gilbert fighting Kasim Uma for the vacant NABA middleweight title. So Joey Gilbert's going to get another title if he wins this fight. It'll be really interesting. Joey is 20-2, never been knocked out, with 15 knockouts. Fought in the same ring as Tony and I in the championship in 98. And he's fighting Kasim Uma, who's very well known in the sport. He's only got
Kasim. Kasim, actually, great story. He actually has a movie coming out about him. And we're doing like a film festival or something. We're trying to find it so we can see it. But Kasim, originally from Uganda, was like kidnapped and forced into like, they're like, not their army per se, but basically like their army. And they were like forced to like fight in like this war at like 8 years old. And he got out, he came to the States. And, you know, that's one thing. Like, no matter where he trained, and he spent a lot of time training in Philadelphia. He, you know, I don't know if he still lives in Philadelphia, but he was training there a lot. And they said he's just a guy, like, he loves to go to different gyms just so he can just meet and talk to new fighters. Hmm. He's just like, he'll just go to different gyms to meet and talk to new guys. I met him at a fight card about a year or so ago, and just what a fantastic, nice, humble guy. A very likable guy, and sometimes you have a fight coming up, and you don't want either guy to lose, and that is the case. And you have sometimes you want both of them to lose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's both guys are very, very great. Joey, I've never actually met, but we obviously talked to Terry and Tommy. And we promote all their stuff. They send us all their press releases. And we had a good interview with them. I don't know if you participated in that one or not. Do you remember that?
I don't remember it, so no. I would have to say no.
Might have been prior to your arrival, but back in the day, we did interview Terry and Tommy about Let's Get It On Promotions when it was first starting. We kind of helped put them on the map. So I guess. And they also came to my hometown and grabbed a fighter who's going to be on the same card. And he's one of those guys with a great nickname. I think you had mentioned before this when you heard it that it was the best nickname you ever heard. Mark the Italian Bazooka DeLuca.
Yep.
Yeah. I love it. Like I said, got a friend of mine. His name is Mike DeLuca. So I always ask him, is this your brother? Yeah, we just laugh about it.
Yeah, and actually, ironically enough, I met his father at the L.A. Colombo tribute. And I realized I put two and two together when I looked at the guy, and I asked him about whether he was a cop before, because I knew that when I used to go to train myself, my earliest time ever going to a gym, so to speak, wasn't even really a gym, it was just the basement of a VFW hall. And this guy, Mark DeLuca, who's the father of the young Mark DeLuca, used to coach there. And I remembered him right away as soon as I saw him. I said, you're the guy that taught me how to box. And, you know, lo and behold, we talked about his son. So it was kind of interesting. But they're going out to Vegas now. They're going to be part of this card. So best of luck. Mark, the Italian Bazooka DeLuca, he's 6-0, and I'm just trying to look for who he's fighting here. I just had it a second ago. Where did it go? Mark.
That is a great nickname. Now, maybe he'll be on the next season of the Jersey Shore with that nickname.
Well, he lives in Massachusetts, so that would be hard.
Well, sure's in Miami this year. I don't watch the show, but I hear these things.
How is the Jersey Shore in Miami?
It is. I don't know. Rich, I refuse to watch that. I was at the event in Philadelphia, like they're called the Wing Bowl, and Snooki was there, and we booed her out of the stadium. She tried to give us all the finger, you know. It's like, shut up, you fat bitch. I really can't stand her.
Yeah. I bet you're not alone. All right, here it is. Mark DeLuca is fighting Alex Rivera, who is 2-3. So thinking that Mark is going to be able to handle this guy pretty easily. Mark's got 4 knockouts for his 6 wins, and also on the card is Joe Hanks, 14-0, with 9 knockouts at heavyweight, fighting a 6-rounder against Aaron Lyons, who's 11-9 with 8 knockouts. And since we have about 8 minutes left, I do want to go over the rest of the Ultimate Fighter card, or the UFC card for this weekend. UFC 119, Frank Mir in the main event versus Krokop, Mirko Krokop. And let's bring up the fight card here. And by the way, on the Ultimate Fighter show, the Bruce Leroy fight was pretty interesting. He actually wasn't doing that well before he lost or he won. The guy that he was fighting was a big time cigarette smoker. You know, I don't know how much he smokes, but he's, you know, they made a big deal out of the fact that he's a cigarette smoker. And he went out there and he handled himself really well. And he also has a problem with alcohol, too. So this guy, Bruce Leroy, you know, that they're really hyping up. They like his character and everything. They put him in one of the commercials already for the Marines. They had even him say at the end of the match, you know, the guy's got some surprising cardio for somebody who smokes cigarettes and drinks beer all the time. So I hope this isn't showing up as a card. There it is. My computer is being slow tonight. The UFC website has too much graphics. Well, I don't know why this isn't cooperating. But it looks like from the pictures they're showing, Nogueira is fighting. Antonio, I believe. Josh, Jeremy Stevens. Little Heathen Stevens is fighting. Let's see if I can get this to show up properly. Maybe I got to go to Sherdog, I guess. UFC fight site's got too much junk going on. Then we did talk to a guy last week who fought one of the contestants on this year's Ultimate Fighter. And now I'm fine. And he hasn't fought yet, but... they picked the teams last week in the last episode. And they set up the house. Of course, the house always looks good, but... it looks like from the previews and preliminary, the first show is going to be another, at least one. I don't know, there's usually more than one, but there's going to be another scuffle inside the house, too. So there's going to be some drama. I don't know whether it's going to be staged or for real, but we'll see. Okay. We're going to get this up in 1 second. So the 25th here on Saturday, UFC 119 is taking place in Indianapolis, believe it or not. Indianapolis, Indiana, at the Conseco Fieldhouse. And finally we have the card. Frank Mir versus Krokop. We also have Antonio Rogério Nogueira versus Ryan Bader. Matt Serra versus another former guest, Chris Lytle. Just like that label. Matt Serra has been around. He was on The Ultimate Fighter. He was actually one of the only Zions fighters from the old regime before bankruptcy to come back and be sponsored by Zions again after the bankruptcy. So if he wins this fight, it's going to be very interesting to see how much of a bonus he gets, because that was one of my theories throughout the whole investigation of this, you know, the Zions shadiness going on over the years is how fighters were given bonuses, especially Zion's fighters seemed to get all the bonuses for these fights. And right after he signed his new contract with Zion's, he got like some astronomical number of bonuses from his first fight. And right after he wins, he puts the Zion's hat right on, and it's just kind of interesting. Anyway, Evan Dunham is fighting Sean Sherk, another former guest of ours, who also spoke a little bit about Zions and his contaminated supplements, because it came out that he tested some of the supplements and they tested positive for some of these forbidden compounds or you know, one of those substances that they don't allow. Jeremy Stevens, as I mentioned, is fighting Melvin Guillard. He's been around a while. Tough guy. C.B. Dalloway versus Joe Dirksen. Matt Mitrione, Meathead, they call them on the last Ultimate Fighter, the heavyweights. Versus Joey Beltran. Waylon Lowe versus Steve Lopez. TJ Grant versus Julio Paulino. Mark Hunt versus Sean McCorkle. And Thiago Tavares versus Pat Auden. So it's going to be an interesting card. Definitely a lot of fighters I'd love to see. Jeremy Stevens always has a good fight, no matter who he fights. He puts in a great performance. And I've actually seen him down in Iowa. Met him personally at the fight that I guess got flown down there for when we first started. So he's a real nice dude and knows a lot of the same people I do. So I'll be rooting for him. And we got time running out. So
less than 2 minutes.
So we gotta go. And till next week. Just stop by unlimitedfightnews.com. I'm going to update the blog here a little bit more in the next couple hours, so check it out. Visit our sponsors, discipline.com. The Zions banner, be sure you click on that, buy some products from the guy that got burned by Zions. He has his own store. He's going to get all the stuff. So check that out. You know, he's a big supporter. Cocaine Energy Drink, drinkcocaine.com. Check those guys out, Prime Athletics. Check them out. And thanks for stopping by and being part of our
great show,
Rocky Marciano.
God bless Rocky Marciano, man. 58 years, still one of the greatest fights of all time. All right. Peace, Rocky. Thanks for all the great memories.
All right, till next week, folks. We're out.
Out.